When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Pop of the morning, everybody, and welcome to Popcorn Culture. As always, I'm your one true host, Jazzy J, joined as usual by my brother, the one true co-host, Buzzy Benjamin B. How you doing, Ben?
Doing great. Just excited to be back.
I mean, two weeks in a row.
2 weeks in a row. I mean, is that typical for this show?
You know what? You know,
common occurrence.
It happens more than you think.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I'm not special. That's what I'm hearing.
People enjoyed it so much last week. We were like, let's run it back.
They were like, all right, bring them back.
Let's run it back again.
The votes were in. Okay. Excellent. Well, I'm glad to be here. And I got to say, it's fun to be the guest because it means I get to ask you about something you have written here on the show notes, the corny joke.
I need
more information.
I'd be happy to open with a corny joke, Ben, as is tradition here on Popcorn
as
Culture.
As is tradition. Yes.
As old as time, and sometimes just last week. All right, here we go. Yeah, so are you ready?
I can only brace myself.
All right.
For impact.
So yesterday I accidentally sent a naked picture of myself to everyone in my address book.
What?
Yeah, so I mean, not only was it extremely embarrassing, but it cost so much in postage.
Does this mean you mailed it?
Right. That's the joke. It's like, there was no accident. You put solid effort into it.
Okay. I got to say, that's like serious. So last week in office, for Q4 2023, we had our D&D campaign adjoined quarterly merch.
Yes.
Concept.
For this show.
Yes. Yeah, so we recorded last week and your character that you created was Julian Flockhart.
Julian Clockfart.
Clockfart. Yes, of course.
Yes, that Julian Clockfart.
Dude, I don't think I've ever been more impressed with you in a creative capacity.
Really?
In my entire life.
Oh.
I was like, Jay is firing on every single cylinder that he has at his disposal at the moment. And you had so much thought out. It was very impressive. But that joke, that corny joke, feels like it is like the lingering remains of Julian inside of your mind. Like...
Because we had so much time, every time we went to go and record this particular Dungeons and Dragons thing for the patrons, like it got pushed back like 4 or 5 times based on like illness or random trips or just like overwhelming workload or something like that.
Yeah, life circumstance, I think a couple of them.
Yes,
yeah.
But even prior to that, I think I was the only one in office who had like had their character sort of picked out like... long ahead of time. Like I think you were sort of crafting yours like the day before.
This is something I definitely like I struggle with. Like I think that for a lot of people, Dungeons and Dragons presents this opportunity to get lost in another character.
Yeah.
And I, for whatever reason, I don't have this capacity in me. Like it's not like I'm holding back from going and creating a character and like fully being the character. It's like I'm reaching for like a lever or a button that's not there.
Right.
Completely. Mm-hmm. Like I think that, and what's strange is that like I think if I was given a prompt or like if I needed to go and like act or something and I knew like my character's motivations and I knew the lines, the words, like,
yeah,
I think I could go and assume the mental capacity of like the person, maybe not well because I'm not an actor, but like I think that there's more of me that feels capable of doing that than than generating a character who I'm supposed to be injecting, you know, like motivations and personality quirks, and like their backstory is actively influencing the way that they're like making decisions and stuff like that.
Right. It's like there's like a certain like vulnerability to like pretending to be a completely made up person that you made up, because somewhere in the depths of it all still came from you.
Exactly.
Right.
Yes. Yeah. So it's like, but that's like the well that I feel like you were able to tap into with this particular character.
Yeah.
That's exactly what I mean. Like I understand where you're coming from with the vulnerability, and I can see it in the people who are good at it, like you and Ethan, like who are and really everybody on the team, I think, was better at it than I was. But like y'all too, especially, like are really good at like assuming like the configurations and stuff like that. And it's like it's not even like karaoke, for example, I've always talked about it. It's like one of these like great fears of mine,
yeah,
because it's like that to me is vulnerability.
Sure.
Like,
yeah.
That is definitely one where I'm like, that would be placing myself before a large group of people. That would be like doing something where I would feel very exposed in a way that I'm not like totally comfortable with.
Right.
This is not that.
Right.
Like this is like, I attempt to go and like seek the motives for my character or whatever. And it is nothing but but blankness.
It is. I mean, it's tricky too, because like the way we've done it, we've only played twice,
true.
Both cases have been like one shot. So like, you know, even in like coming up with the character, like it's fun coming up with like a backstory and stuff, but you don't exactly know what everyone else's character is going to be. And you don't know what sort of like plot line the DM has come up with, and whether or not your backstory will, you know, come into play at all. And I feel like there's probably versions of it where it's like, okay, everyone needs to work on their character like really hard for like, you know, the next 2 weeks, and then send it to me and I'll try and develop the plot around getting your characters through certain arcs and stuff. And like, that's obviously not what we're doing. But so like, I, you know, I also had like little things that was like, oh yeah, you want me to tell me a grand false adventure of Julian Clockfort? Well, I could tell you all about the time I slayed the vampiric wolf moose of Upper Zanvoose or whatever, you know.
See, exactly. Yeah. I'm like, where is this? Where are these words coming from? Did you think, do you, like when you're driving to work in the morning or like when you're in the shower, like, are you thinking these thoughts?
So a little bit. It was a little bit easier because mine was sort of like a copy, not like copy paste, but like it was a very inspired by Gilderoy Lockhart character.
Sure.
Which is a character we have spent so much time like just, you know, making fun of and stuff.
Yeah, for sure.
And like a lot of my own like personal humor is to do like a lot of just like false bravado stuff. Like, isn't it hilarious? My confidence and something I don't have.
but like, you know, that's
but
the thing.
Like, but then it's like for this character, it's just like, but just lose the humility of it all and just do the bravado part.
Right. Right. Yeah. But that's the thing too, is that it's like, does that mean that you actually have like your finger quite on the pulse for what bravado could look like? Like, is there like a version of you that has like bravado?
I mean, not in the way that like Gilderoy Lockhart has bravado, because he's just like
he has arrogance.
He is he's the complete arrogance.
Yeah.
Yeah. So I think I find that particular kind of existence really funny.
Okay.
Or really like I don't know, or maybe like appalling or something is the right word. It's just like, I can't believe anyone would exist this way. So isn't it funny that I would pretend to act this way, kind of thing?
But like, do you think there's any capacity? Because it's like Gilderoy Lockhart is obviously, it's like turned up to 11. Like he is like such a caricature of the real thing, but that doesn't mean that we haven't known people in our real lives who have egos that are similar to that of Gilderoy Lockhart.
Like, sure.
I mean, in a lot of ways, you know, I think especially like in high school, like false confidence or arrogance or whatever is usually more of like a reflection of somebody else's like insecurity.
Yeah.
Is what's actually coming through. But when you're a high schooler, like I know that now.
And yeah.
Like if I were like witnessing like Addie having experiences either herself or with somebody else who was going through that, I think I'd be able to very neatly explain like, okay, if you were to peek behind the curtain, I assume what you would see is not what they're saying, but instead like a very different version of existence.
Right.
And they are trying to distance themselves from that version of existence. And that is where the arrogance and the ego is spawned from. But when you're in high school, you don't know that.
Right.
You know, like when you're living it, you know, so like there were like kids like on my soccer team and stuff like that, who I felt like had that air of self-importance.
Yeah.
And it's like, y'all, we're the JV squad over here. Like,
right.
We're not even that good.
Yeah.
You know, it's like, you might be the best player on this team, but like, you know, we're the fifth best team. Like,
right.
You know, like, I don't know. So, I mean, it's not like we've never known people to have a kind of confidence similar to like a Lockhart. So like, I'm almost curious more if inside of you, you feel like it's like you can find humor in something like Lockhart, because it almost feels like comedic justice towards real life people maybe that you've known.
Yeah.
Or if there's any part of you that's sort of like, you know, it would be kind of fun just to have like sheer bravado and sheer confidence and just like let it ooze out of you. You can't do that. Nobody would like you, but like it would be kind of fun.
You can't. I mean, there is like this wall of rationale that's like, you know, like, oh yeah, don't be that way. Definitely don't be that way. Cause especially like Lockhart, it's just like, yes, no one will like you at all.
Right.
But like there is a certain, it's not that that means like don't be confident at all.
Well,
you know,
I agree with that. Yeah, it's funny because I've almost written it down and now I feel like we've stumbled into it in such a way that's interesting. But like the difference between confidence and like an ego, I think are kind of fascinating.
Yeah,
because somebody can have a big ego and just because they have a big ego doesn't mean that they are not talented. It probably in some way, shape or form means that they are talented, but it also doesn't mean that just because you're talented, you're not insecure.
Mm-hmm.
So like, you know, it's interesting. Like me and Allie have been watching like this, like F1 docuseries, for example. It's about like Formula One race car drivers. And
yeah,
it's honestly like, I would super recommend it. It can be my Wick of the Peak if you'd want, but like,
okay.
It's more drama than you would ever expect. Like there's so many like weird variables and things that are coming into play and like, you know, what's important for one team versus what's important for another. The point that I'm trying to get to though, is that like, you're still looking at 20 of the best racing car drivers on the face of the planet Earth.
Yeah.
You know, but if you're 18th out of those 20, there's good reason for you to both have confidence because you are good at what you do.
Right.
But out of these 20, there's also an understandable scenario where you may feel insecure.
Right.
And so what I think,
yeah. Like, we talked earlier about this year, we went to the Boston Wizards game.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Or the Celtics versus Wizards game. And yesterday was the final season game for the Celtics, and they were playing the Wizards again.
Okay.
Yeah.
So, at home this time, right?
Yeah. In Boston this time, but it was actually, I think it was a much closer game because I don't think the Celtics were playing any of their starters. Cause they're just like, yeah, we're coasting into the playoffs with a 14 game lead and it doesn't really matter, but they still won.
But, okay. Gotcha. Yeah.
But the point is that even if you're the Wizards and you've got, if you're a player on the Wizards and you've got 14 wins to your whole season of 80 plus games, like there's no reason anyone on that team would have anything but overflowing confidence in the face of playing basketball with anybody else.
Oh, sure.
You know?
Yeah. 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 Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah.
And so, but that's the thing though, is that it's sort of like, I personally think that confidence is quiet.
Yeah.
Like that is normally, I think people who are genuinely like talented and gifted at things, it's like confidence by itself is fulfilling.
Mm-hmm.
is what like my read on the situation would be. So like when you feel really like good about your abilities in some capacity, there is no need to get the additional affirmation from the outside world necessarily.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I'm saying this in a complete vacuum existence. Like that is like only raw confidence. But I think confidence in like, you know, it's like the air. It's a blend of elements. Like
no, yeah.
Nobody's state of existence is just pure confidence. But if it was, my argument would be only confidence, pure in its purest form, is quiet. And then anything that like the arrogance or the ego or anything else that you tend to hear, the loudness that comes from people, mm-hmm. like, you know, like, or like, you know, braggishness.
Uh-huh.
I tend to see that as something that's sort of like, it's a side effect. Not that you don't have abilities, but it's a side effect of some other insecurity inside of a space somehow, some way, whether it's like, you still feel like you need to be tested, you know, or like that there's somebody who, you know, it's like as good as you are nearby someone who is better,
mm-hmm.
you know, like if that kind of makes sense. Anyway, this all spawns because I think of the character that you created.
Yeah.
was like the complete opposite end of the spectrum. So if confidence is quiet in its purest form, this is ego and arrogance at its purest form.
I mean, absolutely it was. Although, so the way it worked was that because I talked, Ethan knew what kind of character I was going to have, and we all knew it was based on like Lockhart. So really he gave me like basically one spell I could use more of, well, like I could do some basic stuff, but I wasn't going to do anything but basically one spell, which was allowed me to roll a 100 sided die, and just whatever I came up with, that was the effect we went with.
Yes.
And
yes.
So hilariously, it ended up being semi effective a bunch of the times.
It did. Like, it wasn't
sometimes,
so bad.
Yeah, sometimes it actually was really good at doing helpful things, and other times it was absolutely not.
Right. Yes. It's like, well, yeah. we took a shot.
Yeah.
And now there's watermelons everywhere.
Watermelons everywhere. Yeah. So I'm curious what you think. Like, sometimes you're right. I think confidence is a much quieter thing, but sometimes I do think life demands your confidence to be loud.
So can you give me an example of a scenario where this might be the case?
Absolutely. So like I've been watching, so like just not to bring everything like back to sports or like basketball or something.
Sure.
But,
sure.
So anytime I'm watching basketball and I see anyone at all shoot a three-pointer, I'm just like, gosh, that took courage, you know, like because what's the most likely outcome is that you will miss and the other team will get the ball and your whole team now has to recover on defense from your personal decision to take that shot.
Sure.
And yet the thing is, like, it is your job to take that shot. Like, you have to have all of the confidence to do it. And it's like, that's why you're on the court. You're supposed to be shooting these and making them.
Right.
And like, you know, you can't just be like, I'm confident I could have made it, but like, because you have to shoot, you have to make the shot, you have to go for it. And that is kind of loud. Like, just the act of shooting it in front of a crowded arena is like, you are telling everyone there, like, I'm confident enough in myself that this is going in, because I'm not taking the shot assuming it's going to miss. That's for sure.
Yeah. But I understand what you're saying. Like, so you're basically saying like the act of taking like the 3-point shot itself is a loud action.
Yes.
Okay. Okay. See, I mean, that to me is the skill that they go and practice, that they hone, that like if they're in an empty room and they have all the time in the world, they can stand there and sink that shot time after time after time after time after
right.
time. You know, it's like they know that they can make it.
Yeah.
And you know, and a lot of times in the state of play, like especially on the pro sports level or even a collegiate level or whatever, it's like to give any of those players one full second's time to prepare to set up and throw the shot up.
Yeah.
That is like one of those instances where it's like, well, you're screwed. They're going to make the shot.
You are correct. I mean, so often if you see like the pro athletes get like 1 second of setup without someone throwing a hand in their face, like that's going in.
Yeah. Right. Yeah. Right. Like this is to me, like,
but
one
still,
of the,
but like, you're right, in a closed environment with no one, of course they'll make the shot. But this is like with five people who don't want you to make the shot, you know, aggressively trying to stop you from doing it, and 50% of the crowd actively not wanting you to make the shot, and the other half of the crowd really wanting it and depending on you to do it.
So there's a lot of pressure.
There's a lot of pressure.
There's a lot of pressure. But I mean, and so again, I think it takes a lot of confidence, but I still don't read that necessarily as like, and maybe what I'm going more towards is like rhetoric, mm-hmm. you know, like the way in which you like speak or communicate or like sort of like reflect on the game and the post game interview, you know, like what are you saying while you're at that table with all the microphones laid out before you and stuff like that. Like, to me, that is where like the arrogance, the ego, like whatever else might come into play. But like, mm-hmm. when you're in the game, like that is like the actions of the game. I mean, that is like what you're trained to do. That is your skill,
sure.
like being, you know, on display.
Yeah.
So, but I think that's, I would still see that as confidence. Like, to me, maybe,
oh, yes, I think it's confidence,
right? But yeah. like, that's, I still see it as quiet,
right?
Maybe the difference could be like in the action of making said shot, it's, do you do like a single fist bump to yourself, like sort of like boom, like got it, like okay, like
right,
you thought you could do it, you threw it up, it went in, got
it. I will say that typically when I'm watching like sports, like they won't even do that.
Right. Yeah. So it's like, and I would agree, because most of the time it's like you make the shot and then it's like the other team is like, okay, we want to get back on top of them. So right.
There's no time to celebrate. Yeah.
Exactly. Right. But like, you know, if you made the shot and then went and got up in the other guy's face and you're like, you like that? Like that to me is,
well, that's definitely crossing out. Where does a single fist pump to yourself land on your scale?
I like it. I like it because the fist pump to yourself is more like that. That to me is like somewhere in the zone of like 90% quiet confidence. Mm-hmm. And then maybe like just like a little bit of like ego, you know, where it's sort of like, there's nothing wrong with a celebration. That would not be my claim at all.
Okay.
Like, you know, like I think that is okay. 100%
so basketball is very much like the game is always in motion.
Yeah.
Whereas
yeah.
As opposed to like maybe like football or soccer, where like if you score in soccer, there is typically a huge celebration.
Right. Yes. But like, that's the thing too. Yeah. You're exactly right. Yeah. I mean, and that's, it's probably like a lot of it comes down to like inside of the game itself, like what it represents, because I think like a lot of like long-term players, like players who have their eyes on the very end of the line, they don't celebrate proper, like the full-blown celebration until they're holding the trophy at the end.
Yeah.
You know, like to them, it's like scoring the touchdown. It's like, that was just another step in my quest.
Yeah.
You know, so it's like, yes, I scored a touchdown. Yes, it's a huge deal. Yes, it won the game. And sometimes that may come with like extra exuberance or extra excitement and stuff like that. But I think the players who have like that quiet confidence that are like in it for the long haul, it's like scoring this touchdown was just the next thing I had to do,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah.
And I think that can sometimes be like reflected.
Yeah. Okay. So great example then this past weekend was the Masters.
Oh, sure.
For golf.
Yep.
And I don't know if you watched any of it. I typically don't watch any golf at all, but I had enough people talking about it and I saw enough things on ESPN and I was like, you know what? Beth's not going to be here this weekend. Maybe I'll try and watch some golf for once.
Sure.
You know?
Yeah.
I understand people enjoy this. I don't know. I couldn't have told you like basically a single golfer's name in the tournament ahead of time, but as ever, one of the things I think is really well done about sports these days is like they require you to know nothing ahead of time going in.
Right. Yes.
Like, yeah. You can be watching about 5 minutes later. You'll start picking up on the storylines and what's important, and they're going to focus in on the right people. And
yes.
Yeah. So the guy who wins, Scottie Scheffler.
Scheffler. Yeah.
Scheffler. I was so impressed. I mean, he started in front. Because I guess the way it works is there's like 3 full days of play, or
right.
4 full days, I guess. And so on the final day, he starts in front, just does nothing but increase his lead the whole time.
Okay.
And because if you're and wherever you are on the leaderboard, that's like it's reverse order for play. So like if you're in first place, you will go last. So you have like the maximum amount of information, I guess.
So you know what you have to get.
You know what you have to get. But so it comes down to like, you know, the 18th hole, he's, you know, I think he's 11 strokes under par and the next closest person is 7.
Okay.
And like he hits the ball off the tee, it lands in the sand, and like I, you know, there is part of me that has watched so many other sports and like just knows myself where I was like, boy, it would sure feel like in a game like this, like a 4-stroke lead going into the final hole is all but polishing your trophy.
Right.
You know, but like there's like me watching at home is just like, this is where I would have, I do not have the mental fortitude to like make this shot in 7 strokes, you know?
Right.
Or like,
right.
You know, it's just like, but I mean, you know, land into the sand, not a problem for the, you know, just got out of it, made it onto the green, made the putt 2 putts later, just like that. No problem at all. Just totally cool. Cool hand Luke the entire time.
Right.
I was just like, and then, I mean, like I've watched other people, like, you know, the celebrations for people when they sink that final putt and it's just like, all the pressure is gone. Like, oh my God. And then you know, huge celebration. And just like, this guy just looked like, did it. All right. So I guess I'll just be leaving the course now.
You know, yeah.
He like, hardly gave himself much cheer at all. I was like, I think you're allowed to celebrate some, Scotty.
Right. Yeah. Quiet confidence.
Yeah. But it was. It was a very good display of like very quiet confidence. Just like, don't let just, you know, I don't get in your head about it. Just like, you won. That's amazing. It's super good. And, you know, I mean, he raised his arms to the crowd and stuff like that. But like, even as he's walking through the tunnel, he like stopped to walk through like the big crowds, like make sure his caddy got up and like walked in front of him so he could get some like praise too and stuff. It was
that's awesome.
That was really good. I was like, all right. Cool.
Yeah.
You're so cool.
I'm a fan.
You won me over.
And, yeah. So this is like, I couldn't have told you this guy's name 3 days ago, but I woke up this morning and was like reading the headlines.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, he wins. It's like, he's like the only, like the second person to ever like win this cup and another cup in the same year, behind like, you know, Tiger Woods.
Yep.
And his wife was also 9 months pregnant. And
yeah.
So it was like one of these things where it was just basically if I get the call and, you know, my wife is going into labor, then I'm leaving.
Yeah.
It was just like, Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. All right. This guy is like very interesting to be this good, that at the top of his game, and to also have that like in the back of his mind.
Right.
Well. Just very impressive.
Whew, having a good month.
Having a good month. Having a good month. Yeah. So anyway, but kind of a remarkable runaround here on our conversation about Julian Klokfart.
Julian Klokfart.
Yes. And you're like, I mean, because that is like what was so amazing to me is that I was sort of like, if I were like, man, now I'm trying to think if I could do it. Like, I'm trying to think like if I could just become extremely arrogant all at once, what would it look like? What would I say? And like, that's the part of me that I feel like is like reaching into the black space, you know, where it's sort of like, who is this version of me that has that? Like, maybe it's there, but maybe I ignore it.
Could be. Sometimes I think I've talked about this before. Like I'll try. As I often will do this if I'm feeling like really negative about something, just like try and just like literally think to myself, like, what would it look like if I was happy about this instead? Or like, what would it look like if I forgave this person? Like, not that I'm like particularly feeling inclined to do either of those things in the moment or something.
Right.
But like, just like, how would it be if I just was, and like, how would that change my interactions with that person? And like, can I imagine how I would act in that way? And like, sometimes it does help, like if I'm just angry or something, like just to imagine like what does the version of me that is happy about the way things turned out instead of upset about the way things turned out? Like, is there a way to spin this in my brain or something?
Yeah. You know, and I think that like in a lot of ways can be like good, strong, like people throw around like mindfulness a mm-hmm. lot lately. And yeah. I think it can be like a really, I think it can seem like one of those buzzwords, but to me, that is like a good example of mindfulness at play mm-hmm. is that it's sort of like, okay, let me try to like take some of my more immediate emotions out of the equation and not like let those lead the charge
yeah.
necessarily here. Let me take a few steps back. Let me just sort of think about this like in like what it actually means, or like how does it impact me and in what ways. Like, we talk a lot about like that scarcity mindset.
Yeah.
And I think this is probably when we've brought up this exact same point before, but like if you've got like a group of friends from, you know, high school or college, and you guys have all sort of like gone into the wind, so to speak, and you have like your group chat where you check in on every, you know, each other once in a while, or you know, you guys have something that you're all sort of collectively interested in, or you know, send the life updates as they happen, got a promotion, you know, like, oh, we're pregnant, or like, you know, like whatever. Like,
right.
There's like the ups, downs, and you know, whatever. It's so easy to can sometimes like, you know, to play that comparison game or to think like, oh man, well, you know, like that guy I went to high school with got a promotion, so that probably means I'll never get one for the rest of my life.
Right.
And, you know, it's like he used the one promotion that was left.
Right.
And it's like, that's not really how the world works. But sometimes like if you're feeling down about yourself and you're witnessing somebody else have a win, it's hard not to fall into the trap of thinking like, oh man, you know, like why do the good things all happen to other people?
Right.
You know, but it's like that's not how it is. You know, it's like in the meantime, be like, dude, you made a friend, and not only did you select such a good person in your friends,
right,
you know, that this person has gone out into the world and it's continued to succeed. It's a good reflection back on yourself in a certain way to look at it, to be like, I chose people who are doing good, who are succeeding, yeah. who are growing, you know,
yeah.
like, and I think that's like, it's a perspective shift. You could be jealous in the moment, or you could decide to look at it in a new framework.
Yes. Yeah. I think the abundance versus scarcity mindset is such a, I feel like that is one where it's like, until someone points it out to you, it's very hard to realize like that you are possibly victim to it.
Yeah. And yeah. I think that's exactly right. You know, like that's why I like to have dialogues like this, because I'm like my hope is that by discussing it, it could go out there and like sort of like a fix in somebody's mind.
Yeah.
And they're like, ah, crap. You know, because like almost certainly somebody listening to this episode right now is experiencing this thing right now.
Probably.
You know, so it's like, we're talking to you.
Yeah.
We see you.
You're doing great.
Keep up the good work.
You can do it. There's enough promotions and happiness and love to go around. You know?
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Look at that.
Right.
Look at that. Mm-hmm. There you go. So anyway, shifting gears a little bit. You were watching the Masters over the weekend because all of the girls were out of town.
That is correct. So our cousin Rachel is getting married later this year. Woo-hoo, and this past weekend, go Rachel! She's marrying a Hokie, so
there we
pretty,
go.
Pretty yeah. approved. You know.
Excellent choice.
Excellent yeah. choice. Yeah. Excellent choice. Well done, Rach. Very proud of you. So I'm actually wearing a Hokie shirt right now.
There you go. Yep. Repping strong.
That's funny. So it was her bridal shower this weekend. So our mom and our wives were all up in New York celebrating with Rachel, which just left you and me and Dad here back in Roanoke to take care of all the kids.
Yes.
For a long weekend. I mean, they left like early Friday morning and are not getting back until like midday Monday.
Yes. Yeah. So it's definitely, I mean, you know, like we've certainly, you know, taken these trips before, and they've held down the fort in the exact same capacity as well. But like, you know, it's definitely like just like an interesting one to sort of be like, okay, so like everything, like I need to have this in, you know, top of mind consideration at all times, which immediately, you know, like even going through the weekend, you're like, man, single parents out there, shout out to y'all, because very impressive. Like,
yes, it is a tremendous, you know, amount of work.
Parenting is a team sport, you know, like yes, at least in some capacity. It's like, you know, I think, well, you realize how much, you know, you lean on one another in these types of things. But what all, like, I actually found myself, I felt like living once upon a time, even like before I started like the vlog, the video series I always wanted to make, or even like the podcast I had debated on making for a long time, was just some version of just like life on purpose. Uh-huh. And the whole thought was that like sometimes I think it's really easy to fall into these like rhythms and patterns of behaviors where it's like you're eating kind of like the same meals, and you're hanging out with, you know, the same people, and you're going to like a lot of the same like watering holes or restaurants,
yeah,
or like whatever. It's like, you know, the activities that you engage with are the same activities that you engage with. All of these things are perfectly acceptable things.
Right.
Like, you know, I like spent a lot of my weekend rewatching things I had already watched because they brought me comfort,
right,
to go and interact with something that I knew, mm-hmm, that I knew the beats, I knew where it was going. Like I didn't want to watch something new. I wanted to watch something old, you know,
right,
specifically for that reason. But I did feel otherwise that it was a good weekend of living life on purpose. Like,
yeah.
I feel like I was living with like a lot of intention. It was like, okay, yes, I want to do that thing. Yes, we should go there. Yes, I will meet up with you at this time. Like,
right,
it was like I'm going to try really, really hard to like make sure that like we are busy, and that like the kids are all entertained, and that, you know, there's like we're doing like fun stuff, and we're outside, and they're sweating and playing, and, you know, getting tired, and
right,
and you know, all of that. But how did you feel going through the weekend?
Well, I mean, so in terms of like managing the children, I felt pretty good. I felt confident
that I could do it. You have a quiet confidence.
Quiet confidence about it, no doubt. I will say that I was hindered. It started getting the worst on like Sunday afternoon or so, but I was dealing with like a sinus infection kind of the whole weekend,
yeah,
which was a real pain in the face. I mean, literal pain in the face.
Yeah.
Still dealing with it right now a little bit, not nearly as bad as last night, but, yeah, that was, it was a long weekend in that regard, just sort of like having to deal with all of the kids, but then also your whole face is just in pain, and you get the snot and everything that comes with it. It's just great, great fun times. Started getting into like a fever Sunday night. So that was hindering my enjoyment a little bit.
That would do it. You had a tough draw too, because you had norovirus last week.
Yes, I've had a really couple rough weekends of health here, where yes, last weekend I had norovirus along with Beth and Luke, and then this weekend I've had a sinus infection, which is hopefully calming down. Hopefully I can get a full night of sleep. They woke me up because it hurt so bad last night in the middle of the night. So I've been I just want like a good night of sleep, man.
You know? I know.
Just what I want. And thankfully the kids have actually been sleeping really good. But so yeah, Friday was the start off, and so I knew all week that Luke's school was doing this thing called like Night of the Arts or whatever, where they had like a bunch of little like different stations. I guess it's like come back to school after hours sort of thing. And they have, sure, a bunch of different like just activities set up, and you sort of rotate through all of them. And I had known that it was sort of like a potential thing to do on Friday night, but I wasn't sure if Luke like really wanted to do it. And personally, I was like, just me and the three of you seems like a lot, because I've been to these things before. And even with Beth, it's been kind of challenging to wrangle you guys around. But sure enough, it got to be like 5 o'clock, and Luke was like, oh, we're going to be late for Night of the Arts. And I was just like, Well, I guess we better get going then.
I guess we're going to the arts. I guess
we're going.
Here we go.
Yep. I mean, it's like, it's not something I could really say no to. I didn't feel like, because it was like, you know, it's at your school and you want to do it and you've been looking forward to it. And like, there's nothing really stopping us other than like some mild inconvenience on my part. But got everyone there. Thankfully got good parking, because gosh, otherwise you have to park at the library and that's quite a trek with three kids.
I was gonna say, no, this is the funniest thing. I think I talked about it very recently, but like, your ability to manifest a good parking spot is uncanny. Ooh. But I was literally, I almost brought it up because I was like, I feel like you have like two absolutes when it comes to manifestation. And one of them seems to be illness on single parent weekends.
Yeah.
And the other one is excellent parking spots.
Well, both came up this weekend.
Yeah, I was going to say, yeah, you're bad in a thousand.
Bad in a thousand. Yeah, you know,
you are consistent.
I'm a consistent person. So that was good. The Festival of the Arts was, oh, it was pretty good. There were like a lot of the activities were just like a little bit older than Nick and Nate could do,
okay,
per se, which made it a little bit hard because they, you know, didn't want to participate and Luke did. And then you have to like kind of sit with them and also try and encourage Luke. And it's like semi organized, but there's, you know, 100 kids there or more. And,
right.
You know, a lot to consider. But we made it through that. We went and got some ice cream afterwards. We met up with our dad and that was fun. And then the next morning, me and you and dad and the kids all went to an event called Jurassic Quest.
Jurassic
Quest. At the Berglund Center where I used to work.
Yeah. Good times at that old Jurassic Quest, which I was like, man, they have really, 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 really optimized how to just like just destroy your wallet in
oh my gosh,
inside of like 2 square hours,
dude. Yes, they absolutely, so if you've never been to one of the, well, okay, sorry, let me back up. I have a fun other little story.
Okay.
So prior to working at the Berglund Center,
yeah,
there, just before I got there, when it was called the Roanoke Civic Center, there was an event that had just come through called Walking with Dinosaurs.
Okay.
And it was like what we went to on over the weekend, but like times 10.
Oh,
like,
wow.
Like legit, real, huge, massive, truly immersive, crazy event.
Okay.
Very expensive. And that show at the time was like, it like broke all the records for the venue. Like it sold the most amount of things. They had like, you know, typically when a show came through, they would have like a $10,000 budget. This had like a $100,000 budget.
Whoa.
For like marketing purposes. So just, like everything they did there, I remember there was this giant binder of things that the people had, that like the marketing people before me had like put together to do to promote this event.
Dang.
And it was, I guess it worked really well. Until Cirque du Soleil came, but anyway, not the point.
And then
Cirque du Soleil took the title. Yeah.
Okay. Nice. Yeah.
Those shows were always so cool. If you've never been to Cirque du Soleil, I would totally recommend it. But anyway, so I remember leading up to me leaving to come to YouTube, that particular binder always like loomed large, and my boss was like, okay, so this is what we did for Walking with Dinosaurs. Can you put together something like this to submit for a bunch of like different awards around the area for like, you know, the Addies or something, or I don't know what they're called.
Okay. Like local like awards for good advertising.
For good advertising.
Okay.
Yes. And I remember thinking like, I can't think of a task I'd like to do less than that. And it's like, in my mind, I remember like them asking me to do that and me being like, I haven't given you my 2 weeks notice, yes, but it's coming in like 2 weeks, so like I'm just gonna say I'll do it, but I'm not gonna.
this one's not happening.
You know what I'm not gonna do? This.
Right.
This
right.
one. I'm sorry. Nope. I'm out on this one. Don't think so. I'm not putting together all these, but this seems like like so much work. So I didn't have to do it.
Nice. Dodge that bullet.
Anyway. So yeah, since then though, because Walking with Dinosaurs is so successful, it's like its legacy is that now there are these others like diet versions of the show, which is what we went to this past season.
I see.
Jurassic Quest.
It is entirely possible that I thought we were going to the one.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't even say that I was like underwhelmed. I mean, they had like a huge, like, you know, like animatronic Brontosaurus and T-Rex. And,
yeah,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, they've got like Stegosauruses and like, you know, all sorts of just like very cool, large, dinos
yeah.
that you could look at. But otherwise, I think like the activities that the kids played the most with were the varying shapes and sizes of bounce castles.
Yes, bounce castles you everywhere. Yeah. yeah.
So, which is like one of those things where you just recently purchased one of these for your home.
Yeah.
And I, to the best of my knowledge, it's like one of the best purchases I've just ever seen. Dude, ever.
Yes. Like, I'm not, it is like the deal of the century if you can find it. I think the trick is that it's like only at Sam's Club.
Okay.
Or at least that's here where we had to buy it. Like, it's not like you can go on Amazon and buy this exact product.
Okay.
You can buy versions of it, but the one we got, it is like, it was, it's like $100 at Sam's Club and it's awesome. Like, Sorry. So like, you know, it blows up in like 30 seconds and the return on investment in terms of fun thus far has been tremendous.
Absolutely. Yeah. 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 So, I mean, it's basically for $100, Jay bought like a bounce castle.
Yeah.
It has like a full blown slide and it's in like this really big, robust case. And it's not like underwhelming at all.
Yeah.
It is like really big and it feels like really good quality materials. And I'm like, there's no way in the world that this thing costs $100.
I can't. Yeah. I keep being like, there's no way. What?
Yeah. yeah. But then in the meantime, we spent double that to pay for the tickets to go to see this dinosaur exhibit where the main thing the kids did was bounce castles.
Right.
And it was sort of like, okay, so we got 3-minute temporary access to each of the bounce castles at a time before like the kids' turn was over and you had to wait in line again to redo it. And then like we left the Jurassic Quest and went home that evening to your backyard where we inflated the bounce castle, which you've already paid for, which we've already used on numerous occasions.
Yep.
We ordered pizza, you know, for $30 and had a backyard pizza party bounce castle evening.
Yes.
And I was like dollar for dollar that's money better spent.
Oh, absolutely. Absolutely. Yeah. yeah. I mean, I think the kids had fun with the dinosaurs and stuff. But you're right. I mean, it was big, big bounce castle energy for sure. I think the other thing they had there that was, it was fun to see them do, but they had like little, like, you know, power wheels at the event where like the kids could drive around and stuff.
Like
in a circle, like not even like over some sort of like dinosaur terrain or something.
Right.
But
right.
that was another one, which is like, you know what? Do you want to know what? The power wheels at my house are better than these. You
know? Yeah. I was going to say, we got to your house and you've got like a brand new little power wheel Jeep Wrangler. And,
yeah,
you know, it's like this is really funny because that was our plan all week was to go to your backyard and do backyard activities with all the kids, just like a way to like hang out. And then we were like, oh wait, this thing's in town, we should go do the dinosaur thing, which I would say was very interesting for me for like a myriad of different reasons. But like it's for me, going and watching Addie explore about in this like big large environment, because she's still like just barely on the edge of old enough to go and interact with a lot of the various like bits and bobs of the event. But I'm starting to like witness her do something where I'm like, I think I'm seeing a lot of me inside of her personality.
Oh yeah.
In a way that like it like can break my brain a little bit. Because I'm like, I think you're deciding to do these things in the same way as me, which is like this very timid at first relationship with things, like where like she'll walk into a room, she'll see stuff she clearly wants to interact with, but she's nervous about interacting with them. So it's like she'll like kind of like go over and like, you know, stand near it at first.
Yeah.
And then after standing near it, it's like, okay, that was enough. It's like, and then like we'll walk around the room again and then she'll be like, okay, now I'm gonna go up and touch it. And
right.
then she would go and touch it. And then it was like, okay, it's like, okay. That was enough. And then it was sort of like, okay, now we're back around again. And then I can't get her away from it.
Right.
Now she is just like fully now and completely
we're hard
like,
committed.
Now, yeah, it's like very hard committed. So it's funny because it's like, you know, growing up, I remember like, you know, and I've told this story a bunch of times, but it was just like the water skiing, you know, up in Vermont.
Yeah.
It was like one of those things that like, you know, the dad did, that you did, that like mom did, you know, it was just sort of happening everywhere. And I was petrified of it,
mm-hmm.
you know, and it was like, it was almost like what I wanted to do was like to like hold one of the skis, but on dry land.
Yeah.
And then I was like, okay, maybe I'll hop in like behind the boat and hold the rope and have the skis attached to my feet, but like I don't want to start it, you know, like I just want to get back here and like feel what it feels like to
right.
be right here, but that's as comfortable as I am for now. And then it was sort of like, all right, now we'll try it once, you know, but only once, because I'm going to try and fail, and after falling you know, like I'll need like another time to like regroup and finally like go at it again. But then like now for like the past like 10 years of my life, I have just dedicated to attempting to find ways to go and do this particular activity.
Right.
You know, it's like, it's so I'm like now that I'm like finally comfortable with it, now that I finally have like some measure of confidence, it's like, okay, now I want to go and do it full bore.
Right.
But like even like last year I purchased like a guitar. You know, it's like one of those things. It's like it took me forever to build up the courage to buy the guitar.
Right.
And now I like spend a lot of time looking at the guitar and like imagining playing the guitar and like what my world will be like once I am like part of guitar life. But it's like it's funny to me just because it's like there are so many examples of this that I could give you throughout my entire life where it's like I'll dip my toe into the water and like a lot of times I'll present it in like a very like, no, I'm gonna do it like ironically or like this is funny. Or
right,
let me find a weird excuse or a competition or some other way to go and do a thing because it, like, God forbid anybody know I actually just want to do something. But anyway, so that's how I feel like I'm watching Addy right now. And I feel like I watched it a lot on display over the weekend where you could see her being like, well, I want to go and play like with like the Power Wheel in your backyard.
Right.
But it was like, but she didn't want to drive it. So she kept asking for someone else to drive it.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was kind of like, maybe she like put her foot down and get it to like move forward like a little bit. And it was like, that was enough.
That was
you
it.
You know? Yeah. But like, I suspect that like once she gets going, you're not going to be able to pry her away from it.
Right. Like, I'm driving. I'm going everywhere.
Yeah. 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 Who wants to ride with me?
Let's go.
Yeah. Give me a passenger.
Load up.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that'd be pretty. That's going to be, I'm sure this house is going to be. I was actually reading there. I mean, this is just maybe a passing Instagram post, but it was basically talking about like, does your child act in that exact way, like timid at first? And it was like, or this post was saying that is a sign of like confident children.
Oh, okay.
That it's like, you know, it's like you might want them to just like rush in and be like, you know, yeah, life of the party right away. Like I'm instantly having fun. You know, I will go immediately, but like if, you know, if you can imagine these situations where instead of it being like, do I want to go jump in the Bounce House? It's like, do I want to go do this crazy thing my friends are doing as teenagers or something? Like, do I want to like smoke cigarettes or something? It's like, let me hold back and examine for a second.
Is what you're saying that this is traced to confidence?
That's what this post was saying. Yes.
Okay. So like timidness is actually so in a lot of ways, I mean, I feel like I can almost reverse engineer the thought a little bit in my head because one of the key things about quiet confidence to me is like when it comes to knowledge in particular, mm-hmm. is the phrase, the more you know, the more you realize you don't know.
Right.
So it's like the more you actually become very well versed in any one thing, the more that you start to realize there is a lot to know about all of the things.
Right.
You know, and so it's like you might know like a little bit, like a corner, a piece. But like in order to truly know something completely, it's going to take a lot of time. So then you tend to have like a lot more respect for people who are experts in other fields because what you're able to recognize is that it took them a huge amount of effort to become that expert in that particular field. And so like when I'm thinking about like where being timid about going and doing something, it's like you are thinking like in order to be good at this, I need to know more about it. I need to know what's going on. I need to watch other people interact. I need to learn before I go and like put my foot in,
right.
You know,
you like have confidence in your own decisions.
Exactly.
Yeah,
exactly. Okay. So I can see where that would be coming from. I don't hate that.
Yeah.
That's like one of those where it's like, huh, confidence this whole time. Who knew?
I know.
I just thought I was afraid of everything.
Exactly. No,
yeah.
No.
Yeah.
Yeah. Recontextualize that. I don't know what about your story just now made me think about this, but this is like, or maybe it's like the more you know, the more you realize you don't know. And it's like, so are you familiar? I'm sure you are with the phrase, the customer is always right.
I am very familiar.
Okay. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Yes. And what would you say it means?
At least in my head, it would basically be like, you know, if I was a waiter and I brought a Dr. Pepper to somebody at the table and they were like, no, this is Diet Coke. And you're like, no, it's Dr. Pepper. It's like, you don't say, no, it's Dr. Pepper. You just are like, okay, I'll go get you another one.
Right.
It's definitely Dr. Pepper, but I will go refill another cup with more Dr. Pepper.
Because right.
Like I'm not going to stand here and argue with you that no, like, you know, for these reasons, I know it's Dr. Pepper.
Right. Yeah. Okay. So, I would agree. That's typically what I would interpret it as too. But so this is one of those things where, like that is a phrase everyone's heard their whole life. The customer is always right. So, you know, just whatever, just do what they say, get your tip, whatever, move on.
Right.
But so here recently there has been this wave of people saying like, well, that's not the whole phrase. The whole phrase is the customer is always right in terms of taste. So like if you're selling them a couch and it's like, there's no reason to be like, you know, like don't shoot yourself in the foot because like just because you personally the salesman know that that's a gaudy couch, you know.
Oh sure, you know, sure.
Like,
yeah.
Don't let your taste stop the customer. If they say, if they like it, they're correct. You
yes,
know.
Yes, right.
That's right. The right. So that is what but here's where it gets interesting is that like so and when I heard that I was like, that you know what? That makes a lot more sense that it's like it's not the customer is always right about literally everything.
Right.
It's like if it's like a thing to remember so that you don't shoot yourself in the foot. But then I was like, okay, I wonder how this happened. Who said the original quote? And as I started trying to look up that information of the customer's always right in terms of taste, it turns out like no one can source the second half. It's like become very vogue to have this little tidbit in your back pocket about like that's not the full saying, it's actually just in terms of taste, but no one can source where the back half of this is coming from. It's just like the internet has decided that it's missing the back half of the of the phrase, but no one can source where the back half came from.
Interesting.
So it's like is that the full quote, or are people just saying it's the full quote now?
Well, I mean, to me, it feels like it, like my interpretation of it is the amended version is better than the non-amended version.
Well, sure.
Like I would say that, like, you know, because I think, like, I think that like at its worst, the customer is always right can sometimes allow the customer to berate either the waiter or the sales staff or
right.
or whatever. Like it puts a lot of power, like, you know, we as humans need to have respect for one another and other people. So like, you know, I would say like me and Allie, like a red flag is sort of like people who are rude to waiters. Like we don't
yeah.
like, it's like one of those things that like, we're not very like, I don't know. It's just not who we are.
Right.
You know? So like if we see that, that's like it stands out very
yeah.
quickly because it's just not like, it's not something that we do. It's not something that we would like support. Like, you know, it's like, this is another human who is just doing their job to the best of their ability.
Right.
You know, like, where was I going with this? I had a thought. Hang on. Let me see if I can pull it back.
Customer's always right.
Customer's always right. Yeah. So anyway, so that's like one of those things where I can't decide if is your, do you want the source material like, it, like sort of to the tune of all the people who are like, oh, nope, that's not everything. Or like, is there a world where this is sort of like, okay, guys, we need to grow as time goes on. Like an old adage doesn't necessarily fit all sizes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's like, it's not like it's going to work in perpetuity always and forever. So like maybe it was a good phrase early on as like the modern restaurant, you know, retail environment, like small scale exchanges were happening where it's just sort of like, yeah, really the goal is just for like the person to come in and have a positive experience. So it's just like, you know what, guys, customer's always right. You know, if they think something, then don't, you know,
right.
Don't like beat them down.
I think what is, I mean, I'm not even concerned necessarily with like which one is better. What is frustrating to me is the way that the spread of the misinformation about the second half of it.
Oh,
like
so people saying like, ah, but did you know that's not the whole quote?
Right.
And it's like, but there is no original quote that says that.
Right. It's like, but like, can you source that? It's like, it's an easy one to say, like, that's not the full quote, because when you add to it, it feels like it makes more sense and it almost feels like the original intent and that something got lost, like, you know, in translation at some point and it like became broader, but it's like, it's frustrating to me, like that, there's like this layer of like, I feel like people, it's, I don't know exactly what I'm trying to say. It's frustrating that it feels like a gotcha moment. Like, oh, actually I would like to inform you more about this particular phrase that did you not know? It's like a superiority thing.
You didn't realize
that's not actually the full quote. It's actually this. Did you know that? And it's like, did you know that actually you can't source that?
Right, know? Right. This feels like two different conversations almost a little bit.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
Like where one of them feels like it's more about, because like at this point in time, the quote could be anything.
Right, yes.
And people are like, you know, oh, did you know that it's not 4 score and 7 years ago? It's actually 4 lore and, you know, right, whatever. Yeah. You know, it's like, you know, if you're going to, I'm actually about like Abe Lincoln or whatever, like that's like its own, that could like fall into like its own category of frustrating human interactions.
Yes.
But that is actually kind of fascinating, because like last week in Gryffindor, we were talking a lot about like young Tom Riddle and like what made him like so, you know, charming and stuff like that. And charm is its own sort of fascinating, like layer to like the way in which we interact with each other as humans, because I would say rule number one of being charming is to never actually anybody,
like never correct people.
Yes, like yes. Like in so that like this was like one of those
the
things,
conversationalist is always right, you know.
Yeah, right. Yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's I mean, and I think that like this will happen to me in exchanges on occasion, not to claim a layer of charm or anything like that, but like I it is not necessary for me like to correct somebody when they have said something that I know to be factually incorrect.
Mm-hmm.
Like it's like one of those things where it's like, if it would impact what we are attempting to do, if I'm building a deck and I know we need 3-inch screws and the person's using 2-inch screws, I would be like, hey, we need to use 3-inch screws because like that's like up to code or whatever.
Right.
I don't even know if that's accurate. I'm just using an example.
Right. Yeah. As an example, like a safety example. Yes.
Yes, exactly. Where it's like, you know, like if the person needs to know the information otherwise, but it is not important to me to correct people, even if I hear them and know that they're wrong.
Right.
You know, it's sort of like, it's like, I don't feel like that's going to come across well. This doesn't define our relationship or friendship. I'm not judging you on the basis of having this piece of information wrong. Like none of those things are in play in any capacity. I just also don't have the need to correct you.
Right. Well, I think this is what's for, I think you're right. I agree with you that, and I'm certain I'm guilty of actualing people frequently, but I think what is extra frustrating about situations like this is that people are actualing with unratified information.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah. This I think is like what happens in like the world of the meme. And it's like, it's fascinating for this particular example, because the customer is always right when it comes to taste. It's like, that to me is like, I see it as growth in terms of what the sentiment means. You know,
but they're not even saying it's growth, right? They're saying this is how it always was.
No. That's what I'm trying to say. It's like, I personally actually think the amended version is so much better than the original version that it's like, I like to keep the new version. The actually is, that's what I mean. It's like a completely different like discussion. It's
right.
Like, it's like the actually, it's like, well, no, that your actually is actually wrong. It doesn't really impact anything for me, because the new phrase is just better than the old version of the phrase.
Right.
So I'm happy to use the new phrase, but your actually is baseless.
Yes.
But this is like one of those things. I'm trying to think of, there was a fan theory that got circulated once upon a time. I'm trying to think if it was like an Avatar. Is it the faces of people in Avatar are always like, you have the face of the significant other.
Oh, that the Avatar will look similar to the loved one of the last Avatar.
Yes.
Yeah, to the significant other of the last Avatar.
And is it not the case that this was like a very like broad spread and widely accepted fact about like Avatar the Last Airbender, and it's sort of like, it's not a thing at all. It's just coincidence.
It's hard to say, because like when you're trying to like draw conclusions from one to the next, like some of the significant others don't appear on screen, and you only have descriptions of them. And it's like, I guess you could prescribe this to that next person if you wanted to, for the sake of it. It's like, there's nothing like, it's not like part of the lore for sure. It's just something people have noticed that, oh, this is kind of a thing. And it feels like, it's just adorable if it's true. And if it's not, it also makes a difference.
Okay, but now I'm trying to remember, and I apologize for just asking a genuine question, because I don't know the full, I'm trying to remember the full pieces of the story. Is there not something to do with like a cherry tree? And this is like one of these things, like in Japanese culture, the cherry tree means something, something, something. And it's like, and this is how it's being like conveyed back. And I feel like it's part of the same theory that we're talking about right now. But like the idea is that like everybody like loves it because it fits this piece of Japanese culture. But then when you go to vet the piece of Japanese culture, it doesn't exist.
Oh,
it's like people are like, oh, it's so cool that Avatar did this because what they're paying homage to this like really cool Japanese custom.
This is ringing some bells for me because I feel like when we set out, I think this is something we ran into. Like we set out to write this theory, we'd heard about it, and we were including the stuff about the tree or something. And then as we were trying to get like a source for the tree, it was like the tree thing's not a thing. It's not even real.
Yes. Yeah. Oh gosh, I wish I could remember the full context.
I know. Hold on. If you keep talking, maybe I can pull it up in my notes somewhere.
Yeah. So this is like one of those prime examples where it's sort of like people can meme-ify like a sentiment or something. And I think if it resonates and hits in all the right places, it's sort of like when you see a meme or like an image or like, you know, like a viral post or something, it's like you don't always necessarily like you just sort of trust it at face value, especially if there's no reason not to, or if it's not like questioning the base. It's like you as like a consumer of Avatar might not know that much about the deep Japanese culture. So if you just hear, oh, like this is a cool thing that they did, and it's because of how like Japanese culture works, it's like there's no reason to question it. You just assume that that's a thing.
Yeah. Okay. I've got the script pulled up, but Oh, wait. Here we go. I do see where I said no such folklore actually exists in Japanese culture. Okay. Gosh, I would have to... Maybe we'll just take a quick transition here while I read the script.
There we go. Yeah, go ahead.
Okay.
Popcorn Culture is sponsored by Shopify. Y'all are likely aware of the fact that we have our very own Shopify store, Carlin Brothers Mercantile, and it's hard to imagine not having it now, but arriving at the decision to open our own web store was a big one. In fact, we started our journey on the interweb back in 2012 and didn't finally open up shop until 2018. And a huge part of that is just not knowing where to start, but that's where Shopify steps in. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business, which is a fancy way of saying it's a really easy and effective way to start an online business, no matter if you're operating out of your garage or have like a whole building or three or something. Once we were set up, our biggest concern was trying a new product, only to discover no one was interested in it. But Shopify is powered with so many reports, more than you can even imagine. And this is so handy because it allows us to use data to better provide what folks are actually interested in. It's so easy to use, but even if you do find yourself caught in a jam, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Sign up for a $1 per month trial at shopify.com/poppop. That's all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/poppop now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/poppop.
Popcorn Culture is supported by Arena Club. Okay, so you guys know that I love trading card games and that me and Ben are big time collectors of Pokemon cards. You know, it's that childhood fantasy of finally being able to use adult money to buy those highly coveted rares of our youth. And like, even in our office, we have not one, but two full display cases with some of our all time favorite rarest cards that we've pulled. But something I did not know existed when I was a kid in my youth was the grading process for trading cards or sports cards or whatever you're collecting. You know, to me it was just like a rare Charizard is a rare Charizard. Like it doesn't matter if it's been hanging out in my pocket with my lucky paper clip. Turns out it does matter, and kind of a lot, because if you get your cards professionally graded, it can add huge value. And then not only that, but once they're graded, they will like seal them in that pristine condition inside of a plastic case, or what's known in the industry as a slab. And that's where Arena Club steps in, because it's like buying a booster pack, but it's for a pre-graded card. Now, I know that can take like maybe a second to wrap your head around because you're opening physical cards on a digital platform, which means you open the pack online and see your pulls where they can be added to your showroom for the world to see. But you can also request them to be sent to you at any time. So they have got a ton of pre-graded cards, and then you will get to randomly open one, and then they'll keep it for you, or they can send it to you, or you can just like sell it or trade it online or whatever you want to do. But whether you're buying, selling, trading, or displaying, Arena Club is the card collecting platform you have got to check out. And right now you can get 10% off your first purchase by going to arenaclub.com/poppop, which, wow, that is a crazy offer. 10% off a $400 slab pack. That's like $40 right there. Anyway, that's arenaclub.com/poppop for 10% off your first purchase.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
Okay, Ben, I found it.
Okay.
Okay, so...
Okay, yes, we're back.
In the Avatar fandom, the theory was sort of going... This theory was going around that if you... That the Avatar will always look like the significant other of the last Avatar.
Okay.
Or whatever. And, like, people started noticing it, and it started to, like, sort of go through the fandom like wildfire, and it was usually accompanied by some kind of quote along the lines of, you know how in Japanese folklore there's the saying about how in your next life you'll look like the person you love the most in your current life? Well... And then, you know...
That's evidence. It. Okay,
and so that... And then it's like, oh, cool. But so yeah, when we were making the video, we started trying to find said Japanese folklore and it did not exist.
Yes. Okay. Yes, that's exactly it. That's exactly it. Yes. So it's so difficult because you can hear something like that and it really is like the potato chip of information. It's like, it's delicious.
Yes.
You know, the moment you consume
it. Right. And you immediately want to tell other people.
Right. Yeah.
Now I have a fun fact.
Right. Yeah. This is like a cool thing. It's like, oh, here's the thing.
Right.
And so I suspect to go back to the customer is always right sentiment. I suspect that what has happened is enough people have heard this new phrase and they have been falsely told from the source. Actually, that's not the whole phrase. And I think what's happening inside of their minds is they're like, oh, well, the whole phrase is better than the shortened phrase that we've been using forever and ever and ever. And it's crazy to think that we've shortened it when the whole thing has been better all along. So boom, did you know that like originally it was much longer? And it's like, no, it actually wasn't a lot longer originally. There is no source material for that particular piece of information. It means that maybe you're being a little bit of a know-it-all in the situation, but I think we can all agree that the end sentiment is better,
right?
You know, yeah. like because I think it gives like a slightly more like a much more effective range of focus. Like, you know, it's like one of those things, if you go to order like a steak or like a burger or something, you know, there are a variety of different temperatures at which you can order, you know, like a nice filet mignon at a restaurant.
Yeah.
You know, and it's like some people may claim absolutely and vehemently it needs to be rare because that's like its most perfect status. You know, there's medium rare, medium well,
and well done.
And well done. You know, and so like it could be the case that if you're there and you're the waiter and somebody's like ordering $100 steak, you know, like a Wagyu cut or whatever, and they're like, I'll take it well done. Like the waiter might be like, no, you will not.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like that, not an acceptable version. It's like, no, because they're the one eating the steak. It's like
they're going to pay you the money no matter what.
They're going to pay the money no matter what. It's like, this is not a moment for you to tell them the correct way to enjoy something that they're otherwise enjoying.
It does feel like there are restaurants that would be like, you're not allowed to order this well done. This is like disrespectful to the cow or something.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, on some level, like I could see a
or
world,
to the chef maybe.
But I bet in those instances, like that wait staff is so well trained, or they're just so knowledgeable about like what they're selling, you know, in food,
yeah,
that they might have a very polite way to advise.
Right.
And I suspect that it's not going to come across in a negative way, but they're like, they might say like, might I recommend it medium well, you know, or something like that.
I'm sure they can, you know, handle it with grace. Yeah.
Because I bet, like you're going to lose customers real quick if it's a very expensive dinner and you come at the customer.
Oh, I mean, absolutely you will. And I would bet that even if it's your restaurant policy, you would still cook it the way they want.
Yeah.
You would just try and dissuade people from doing it.
Right.
Or
right.
something out yeah. of the gate. Although I've never been in a restaurant like that personally, but I also don't order well done steaks. So.
Also fair. Yeah. No. So it's just like a fine line. But I think like the point is, or like, you know, if you're on a car lot and there's a mustard yellow new car and you're like, heck yeah, that's the best color I've ever seen.
Yeah.
The salesperson like is not going to benefit at all from telling you that it's not.
Yeah, I know. They're going to be like, you know what? This one's the only one they made in this color. Can you believe it?
Yeah.
It's one of a kind. It's unique. Yeah. I'll give you a deal.
Just one mustard.
$200 color. Off.
Yeah, there you go. For the mustard. You know, this is a special deal because you appreciate it in a way that most people don't.
Yeah.
There you go. So the customer is always right when it comes to taste.
When it comes to taste. Or maybe not.
A newly modified version of the phrase.
Yeah, possibly.
Possibly, maybe. Yeah. Or maybe George Washington said it.
Maybe. I can't imagine George Washington saying that.
Yeah, I like the thought that the customer is always right Wikipedia page is now, will temporarily have the originally spoken by George Washington.
Yeah, right. Someone's going to go in and change it.
For one hot second where somebody's like, I did not know George Washington was the one who said that.
Wow.
And if he did, I just got lucky.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, the voter is always right. That'd be more along his lines, I think, right?
Yeah, that sounds right.
Yeah.
That does feel very Washington-esque. Yeah. the voter is always right.
The guy who spearheaded democracy. Yeah. Yeah, that sounds like him.
Yeah, it sounds like him. That tracks.
A little closer. Ben, you know, actually, speaking of presidents, we haven't had one of these in a while, but I had a fun fact about Abe Lincoln.
Do you really?
Yes.
What a great way to close out today's
episode. I know. Did you know? I couldn't believe I found this one.
Okay.
Did you know that as part of his campaign, he was known as Abe Rail Splitter Lincoln?
I'm surprised because I didn't know it.
Yeah.
But I'm not surprised at all because it's Abe Lincoln. Because
it's Abe Lincoln. The man he's like, I can't believe that we didn't come across this particular fact earlier in our findings.
But why do they call him the Rail Splitter?
Well, okay.
Because, I mean, it's a great nickname.
Yeah. This is kind of like that. It's like the modern day sentiment of like, you could get a beer with him. Kind of thing.
Okay.
You know,
okay.
So yep. Rail split. Do you know what rail splitting is?
I mean, literally the thing that comes to mind would be railroad workers who are driving those like really heavy nails into the really heavy wood.
Right.
That holds.
That's not what it is.
Oh, okay.
So there are these things called rail split fences, which no doubt you've seen a bazillion of.
Yeah, I know. Yes. Yeah.
So it's basically just the act of splitting logs to make those fences.
Oh,
yes.
And he was a rail splitter.
And he was a rail splitter for a brief time in his youth.
Of course he was.
You know, a man of the people.
He was,
as he were,
yeah.
Right?
You could have a beer with him or his preference of tap water.
Tap water. Yeah. Even though he owned a bar illegally.
Illegally. Lincoln.
Oh, good old Lincoln, man.
Good old Lincoln.
He's full of them. Yeah, this was part of his campaign, Abe Rail Splitter Lincoln, that made him seem more of the people, and people really appreciate it. It was like more of that, like, you know, blue collar attitude, I suppose.
I love it.
Yeah.
I love it. No, that's great. Okay. And actually, I mean, this is barely, but only because you had a fun fact about Abe Lincoln.
Yeah.
Somebody submitted to me a fact about coyotes. A possible fact about coyotes, which is that the Arizona coyotes, I believe, are potentially moving to Utah.
You know what? People shared this fact with me a bunch as well. They were like, tell Ben.
Yeah. So anyway, I have heard you. Yeah. My beloved Arizona coyotes are moving and moving. Becoming the Utah coyotes.
The Utah coyotes.
Yeah.
At least they're keeping the coyote title. You know?
As they should.
Right.
I mean, can you think of a more majestic beast? I can't.
No. I mean, what else is there?
Nothing.
Ducks.
Yeah. There are ducks.
There are ducks.
Now that you say it. the Utah Ducks, I wouldn't be. Although the Anaheim Ducks,
the Anaheim Ducks are already a thing.
Yeah, and they're like sort of based off the Mighty Ducks. So it's like I'm okay. I'm fine with that. I think the Ducks need to stay where the Ducks are because they were kind of created by Hollywood.
Yeah.
So it makes sense.
There aren't enough duck themed mascots out there. Like the Anaheim Ducks are really the prime example.
You know, do you
the Oregon Ducks? I guess are you know they're there. They're doing things.
Would you be happy if the Washington football team changed their name from Commanders, which I think we can all agree is just kind of subpar, to the Washington Mallards?
I mean, Ben, that would be like the peak name they could have chosen.
Best name.
Best name. Ducks? Yes.
Yeah.
Of course.
I mean, they're like, I mean, I think that's probably really what it comes down to as well. It's like, you know, the bald eagles, you know, it's like, it's kind of what we're known for here in America. But like, you know, if we felt like changing it, especially starting, you know, with a Washington based team and all of a sudden we start to have like these glorious images of ducks.
The question is, how on earth did Philadelphia get eagles away from Washington?
Why isn't it
the Washington Eagles? That is clearly what it should have happened.
It does feel
Philadelphia.
Like Philadelphia. Yeah. Like that's like one of those where like someone just called dibs.
Someone, yeah.
You know,
Philly's
like,
super called dibs on Eagles.
Yeah. Yeah. It's like, but that doesn't make sense. It's like
guys. And they'd be like, excuse me, the Declaration of Independence was signed in Philadelphia. And you'd be like, that's a pretty good point, I guess.
That's, yeah, okay, you know, okay. So you got
I'll
that.
Give you that.
You've got that going
you've
for you.
You've got that, but also DC is currently the nation's capital. Okay.
But actually. great way to make friends.
I know, right? Yeah. Ben, this is a conversation you walk into, you're assuming you're on opposing sides.
I mean, yeah.
Commanders and Eagles fans, I mean, they're never going to get along,
yeah,
right?
Probably not.
Not so much.
But that's okay. I mean, it's like it goes back to that phrase, like sports are the most important, unimportant thing.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I agree. I've been having so much fun watching sports lately.
I know. How about that?
I know. Who knew? Who knew I like sports?
While Alice was out of town.
My whole life.
I was going to say, it's not exactly a mystery.
Not a mystery.
While Alice was out of town this weekend, I watched Miracle, the of the 1980 Olympic hockey team, and Remember the Titans.
Yeah. So you told me that you watched Miracle and I was like, that's a great idea. Yeah. So I watched it last night.
It's so good. I get chills.
And then we were talking, literally, I think it was Friday night. I was like, you know what I haven't watched in a while? Remember the Titans. That would be a great movie maybe to watch this way. I didn't, but then, yeah, I was talking to you the next day and you were like, you said that you had also been thinking about watching Remember the Titans.
I typed in Remember the Titans on Disney Plus and then Miracle showed up underneath it. And I was like, I feel like I'm almost more in a hockey mood on this evening. So I'm going to watch that.
Just going
to
do it.
So it took me two nights to watch Miracle. And then I watched Remember the Titans last night.
Oh,
so
nice.
I was like, I'm just living life large right now.
There you go. One of my favorite things about watching Remember the Titans with other people is be like, when they get to Victory Stadium at the end, I'll be like, that's in Roanoke. That's it used to be.
Yeah.
It was so gross.
Victory Stadium. I think I finished my first ever 5K when I was 9 inside of Victory Stadium.
Yeah.
They would often have it be the case that you'd run your last quarter mile on the lap.
On the track in the stadium.
Yep. So we have been there. It has since been demolished.
Yeah.
But you know, the final game, Victory Stadium, Roanoke, Virginia.
There it was. Yeah. There
it was.
Yeah. It was great. It was way less dramatic than the movie would have you believe. Not to actually the movie or anything.
You were all over
I'm
it
all
today.
Over it
no,
today.
It's like you're expressing your frustration for actuallyers and then doing it.
No, but this is true. This is true.
Yeah. Oh, no, I know. Yeah. But
it's not people are gonna be like, wait a minute, no, it wasn't.
So your line for actuallying is whether or not the person's actually is correct.
I think it is whether or not it's like it. Yeah, I think just correcting people in general is kind of annoying, especially because it often doesn't matter. I think this is more. I don't know. I'm not sure where the line between like fun fact and actually.
Okay.
Always is. This feels more like fun fact.
Okay.
And it feels like one. I think if two people in like, you know, the middle of North Dakota were talking about this and someone had taken a little bit of extra interest and looked up the end result of the TC Williams high school game that year.
Right.
And like knew about it and, you know, they were just springing it on their friends. That would seem a little more actually. But because we're literally from Roanoke and the state where all this stuff happened in the movie,
yeah,
it feels a little bit more like, you know, because I'm here, I'm a little extra informed.
That's true. That's true. We're physically where we are right now is like 1/2 mile from the
from prior, where Victory Stadium was.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So that's true. That's
yeah.
True. We are kind of close to the source material in this particular.
Exactly. Instance. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I have one last thing I want to talk about because I feel like it pairs nicely with our conversation about the customer always being right.
Okay.
And it was something that I discovered over the weekend and I found it to be kind of fascinating because it was never something that I had considered before. But I recently signed up for a subscription to the New York Times, which I feel like everybody in office has like, you could have like an office bingo card and be like, okay, Ben says he got a subscription to the New York Times, but since being off social media for so long, I needed a place where I got news and I signed up for a news source.
Yeah.
And it turns out now I have a lot of news.
Turns out.
And I'm like, it's sort of fun for me because people would be like, hey, did you hear there was an earthquake in New York City this morning? And I'm like, I did hear that.
Yeah.
I read about it in the New York Times.
I was surprised you knew about Scotty Scheffler.
I did. Yeah.
Yeah,
yeah,
you knew.
Read all about it this morning.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, I woke up and I saw my New York Times post and I was like, all right, diving on in. I am so informed all of a sudden.
Mm-hmm.
But no, so I was reading an opinion piece over the weekend that was talking about the New York Times crossword puzzle. And I feel like it's a really interesting one for the concept of the customer always being right.
Okay.
Because crosswording is sort of a sport unto itself. There are a lot of like, and we've talked about this before, but like the way that the clues are set up and delivered for you are usually phrased in specific ways that the more crossword puzzles you've done, the more you can recognize patterns of behavior on behalf of the hints.
Yeah.
And so like a lot of times you know how to interpret a hint based on the way that it is like written, or if there's like a blank space, or if there's like a question mark, or it's like another word for, or like whatever. So there's a lot of different ways they can clue you in. And so people who do crossword puzzles, like in a lot of instances have done, especially the New York Times crossword puzzle for a long, long, long time.
Right.
And
this is their Sunday ritual,
if not daily ritual, to interact with this particular kind of crossword puzzle. And one of the things that they were talking about that has recently made some puzzlers angry is that the puzzle itself has followed modern times in terms of like phrases that have only recently become prominent in like the past 15, 20 years or so.
Right.
And for a lot of people, especially if you're like, let's just say you're like on the elder end of the spectrum,
right,
you might not be familiar with these phrases because they were like, just, they all were created so after your time. So it puts you at like a weird, distinct disadvantage if you're, let's just say like 70 years old and you're referring to a phrase that was invented in 2010 by high schoolers.
Right. Yeah. Like it's difficult for and I would have to guess that the typical crossworder is older.
I wouldn't have that information off my cuff, but it stands to reason that it would skew that way.
Sure. Right. But like that, so they're upset about like the Gen Z-ification of the New York Times crossword puzzle.
Right.
Yes.
So I think the example they were giving, well, like the center line of the crossword was the clue was arrive in a blaze of glory, was the hint.
Okay.
And the answer to it was coming in hot.
Okay.
And I think it's like one of those things where it's like you could, I mean, it's not like, as I say that, I don't suspect that anybody listening right now has not heard the phrase coming in hot.
Right.
You know, but it might be the type of thing where if you've been doing the crossword puzzle for, you know, 30 or 40 years now, it could be extremely frustrating that this is not a phrase that you would know or would come off the top of your head or that you've ever said yourself or anything.
It's not like the customer's always right.
Well, so that's the thing. Yeah. So like what this person was saying is that like the New York Times is getting a lot of feedback from a lot of their like regular puzzlers.
Right.
And they're like, hey, what the heck, guys? Like this is not a good answer because how am I supposed to know this?
Right.
And it's
how
like,
I feel anytime I do a crossword.
Yeah, I know. That's exactly right. Yeah.
How am I supposed to know this?
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
This is yeah. So it's like one of those where like, you know, trivia is usually it's most fun when the answer is like on the tip of your tongue. If you can
right.
think just like a little, I think this is the majesty of the Wordle game is that none of the answers are ever highly obscure words.
Right.
Or at least not commonly.
Not always. Sometimes.
Sometimes. But like for the most part, like you'll know the 5-letter word. Like it's not going to be some extremely obscure
right.
whatever that you would never use in everyday conversation. So just about anybody could or should be able to solve the Wordle reasonably.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like whether how many guesses, you know, different story. But so I think that's like what's kind of fascinating is that it's like my life experience never exposed me to this particular phrase. And so like the New York Times though, though, I think, is like, sort of like from like an editorial perspective, it's like, it's good for us to keep up with this.
Right.
Because, you know, like people who have grown up with the phrase will have always known the phrase, and then they'll fall victim to this exact same thing eventually as well. And mm-hmm. I was like, this is so interesting, because it's like, is the customer always right? So if you have all these people being like, hey, you can't have coming in hot as the answer to a New York Times crossword thing. It's like, if you're the New York Times, do you fold to that pressure? Do you say like, ah, that's a good point. Okay, we're sorry. We didn't mean to make our primary, puzzlers mm-hmm. upset
right.
by incorporating such answers.
Right. Or must you have loud confidence in yourself?
Or must you
have, and press forward with your modern day crossword puzzle?
I still think you can have quiet confidence. I think you just stick to it.
Yeah.
It's like you don't even comment on it. Don't explain why this way is better. Just keep doing it.
I still think it's the same thing.
I don't know. It sounds to me like where we're splitting hairs on confidence and what I would regard as quiet confidence is different from like you said, sinking the three pointer or taking the shot. Like, to me, that's not loud. That's just doing the thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's how you react. You're
right, but they're going to keep publishing new modern crossword puzzles.
Right.
Right. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. That's the same as taking the shot.
It's the same as taking a shot.
Because it's very public.
But you're just playing the game. You are just if you are the creator of the crossword puzzle, it's like, this is your job. I am sticking to what I'm at. Going and having a conversation about it with somebody else or telling them that this is the superior way to do it, that to me is where it verges into ego or whatever. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah. But just playing the game. It's just that's just playing the game.
You're just playing the game.
Like, you're just doing your thing. Yeah. Yeah.
Coming in hot.
Exactly. Oh, man. But anyway, guys, let's close it out there. I feel like we've gone on and on and on and on and on today. All sorts of stuff. Guys, exciting news. We do have the official announcement for Q2 quarterly merch for Popcorn Culture. We are going to be doing a pop, pop, pop socket.
What?
I know. I'm so excited about this one. It's going to be so
fun.
This one's
been on our list forever.
It was like one of the first ideas we ever had. It was like, oh my gosh, I love it so much because it's called a pop socket.
It's called a pop socket.
It will be a pop, pop, pop socket.
It's a pop, pop, pop socket.
A pop, pop, socket. Oh, man.
It's fun to say. Yeah.
Even more fun to play with. In case you're unfamiliar with pop sockets, they're like the little thing that you attach to the back of your phone or phone case that allows you to like hold it better.
Yeah.
And I think that I've been holding out on getting my own pop socket in await of this moment, of this day. So my pop socket will be the pop, pop, pop socket.
The pop, pop, pop socket.
You're saying it so much better than me. I'm failing epically. And I've done so well this whole time. I was so excited about it. And unfortunately, anyway, so long story long, if you want to go and check it out, you can do so by heading on over to patreon.com/popcornculture and selecting that quarterly merch tier.
Yeah.
Also contributes to the vote as to who is each week's host of the show, which currently Jay is winning.
That's right. What?
I'm not having sludge about it at all.
No sludge over there whatsoever.
No big deal. It's totally fine. It's totally fine.
Yeah.
You know, it had to happen eventually.
Yep.
And it did. Congrats. Congrats on the win.
Yeah. Thanks so much.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. Otherwise, guys, until next time.
Pop, pop.
Today's episode was edited by Isabel Chrisley. Vaishon Brandon does our art. Catherine Stein is our production manager. And the show is hosted by me and Jonathan Carlin.